Bart, what are the new products coming down in the very foreseeable future that will change us beyond the chips that we've talked about?
So, George, there are golf balls and tennis balls and maybe modifying the graphite and a racket. These are kind of humdrum nanotechnology products, but they're real, and they come in from many angles. There's an effort out of Samsung to give us better flat panel displays so that they're, of course, cheaper, but you can take them out in the sun and have a better vision of them. They're not as hot. They can do more internally. There's a variety of gadgets, and something that I've worked on at the theoretical level with a PhD student who's now got his PhD, Dr. Ian Lee. We looked at the problem of body armor and just the effect on clothing. And I mentioned you can go to Eddie Bauer and get a pair of nano pants or other, in effect, Teflon and woven shirts or devices where the water beads right off. But what about if you could shoot soft body armor and disperse a lot of that energy without producing horrific bruising, which takes place? In fact, if viewers, or listeners rather, go to my webpage and download the preprint of the journal article on vest technology, you'll see a policeman who was shot wearing a bulletproof vest, shot by a .44 Magnum, and the horrific bruising that takes place, and worse, the skin trauma beneath that. There's been a lot of work, George, at several laboratories, often sponsored by the Army, as you would imagine, on this issue. And can we find a way to get at that nano level the fibers or nano stuff woven into the fibers, to including nanotubes, to at the key moment come together, maybe transform their chemical properties somewhat, or to somehow disperse the energy? And that seems to be the case. So even taking simple carbon nanotubes and putting them in Zylon or Kevlar fabric seems to greatly increase that. And there's something called shear thickening fluid, stuff that's fluid-like. So you might have a fluid-based vest, but when you're shot at that moment or hit with a sudden impact, it suddenly becomes quite rigid and recruits fibers in effect, or takes on a woven-type structure or simulates that in that nearby area. Then after the energy's been dispersed, it goes back to something else. That's at the military level. Of course, that's a life and death thing if you're in Iraq or if you're a police officer in the line of duty.
Mm-hmm.
But beyond that, George, there's a great effort to put the sheer computational power into clothing. For example, it wouldn't be a bad idea maybe to have some nano sensors woven in your shirt. This is quite feasible. So, for example, maybe it changes color to detect a certain virus or any kind of biological agent. There's a lot of people working on that. There's the Office of Homeland Security is supporting literally billions of dollars of research one way or another directed at that. And it's not the sort of thing you can pull off the rack right now, but it is an active development.
What are the Chinese doing in this field?
You know, Chinese are, if you go to the web pages of the journal Nanotechnology or the journal Nano Letters, and you can go to both of those, and just look at the co-authors' names, you'll see an awful lot of Chinese names. This is a big deal for the Chinese. They've really found, I think, a niche in the sciences. Even though, for example, carbon nanotubes were discovered by a Japanese researcher in the early 1990s, and the Japanese have dominated consumer electronics and things like fuzzy logic. But at the device level, where chemistry intersects electrical engineering and information sciences, the Chinese are doing wonders here. Chinese researchers in general. And the Chinese, as you know, graduate more science and engineering PhDs than we do. Now, as a U.S. professor, I'd argue that ours are better, but you have to be realistic, and India is coming right up in the pipeline as well. In fact, if you walked around at USC to my school, at our graduate school, we were just ranked 7th in the nation by U.S. News and World Report, you would see a lot more Chinese and Indian faces than typical Americans.
Well, that's absolutely true, like you say, it doesn't make them any more advanced, but per capita, they're throwing out more than we are.
Right, and other countries, not just India and China, but other countries are actively pursuing all aspects here, not just simple gadgets like putting nanotubes and nanodevices and nanowires and fibers or in golf clubs, and understands another application. But also at the pure bio level, and this is an issue you touched on before the break, if we tie our hands, George, on issues of cloning and a lot of things like that, we in effect just surrender a technological advantage to countries that don't do that, for example, Japan or China or a variety of other countries. And we have to come to grips with that. And also, if you look at the number of patents, if you go to the PTO, the Patent and Trademark Office, you'll see there's a great number of those from foreign countries. And that's only on the increase. It's not necessarily a bad thing. But if the United States has to make a collective decision here of sorts, it is one ultimately involving education and perhaps funding and a variety of other things. We've had it very good since World War II in this country. We've had the technological lead. We weren't really challenged. You simply can't argue that for the next 20 years, and certainly not the next 50.
Times are changing, aren't they?
They sure are.